grieving the loss of my comfortable life. Okay, first I have to tell you, I'm not that dramatic. I love my life. And things have been changing over the last couple of months. I have this great opportunity to join the Crossroads Anywhere team and lean into leading in Columbus, being the campus pastor for Crossroads Columbus. And that was awesome. I was asked, and I decided I wanted, before I said yes, I just wanted to talk to God a little bit about it. So I prayed, and I just asked him, like, hey, God, this is what I think I want to do. Are you in it? Are you going to go on this journey with me? And what I became aware of is over the last couple of months, maybe even the last couple of years, I had so many good experiences that would help in this role. And I felt like I had grown. But one of the things I knew, God could have taken anyone on this journey. And he chose me. And I believe that's because he wanted to grow and wanted me to grow closer to him. So I'm real excited. And I go to Matt and I say, yes, I'm in. And that looked like, okay, we don't have a playbook for this, so let's figure it out. It's a blank slate. So we're going to try things. And some of them are going to fail. And that's okay because we'll learn. And we're going to do some things that are going to be amazing, and we'll keep doing those things. But in the midst of feeling all this excitement, I started to get a little sad. And I didn't know why, because I knew I wanted to go. I wanted to go to Columbus, and I wanted to figure this out. But something was weighing on me. And so I was talking with one of my mentors, Kathy, and in the midst of that conversation, I realized that I was grieving. That confused me. Like, how can I be super excited about something that I'm getting to do? Like, I get to do this, but I'm grieving something? For me, historically, grief was only tied to tragedy. And this was so far from tragedy. I'm not in crisis. I'm actually getting to experience amazing life change. So why is this here? And another reason it was hard was I didn't know how to grieve. I mean, in the past, I thought I did, and I thought how I handled things was healthy, but it wasn't. For example, the summer before my 11th grade year in high school, I went on a vacation with my little sister to visit family friends, Miss Sally and Mr. Jan, and their kids, because that would have been weird. And 2 days into that vacation, Miss Sally sits me down and she tells me, my grandmother's died. And I began to cry. I knew my grandmother was going to die. She was in hospice. She stopped eating. She wouldn't talk to anyone. Like, I knew it was coming, but that didn't make it any easier. And my sister, on the other hand, had a very unfortunate experience. She was sitting at the kitchen table with Maria, her friend, and Mr. Jan walks into the kitchen. He opens the refrigerator, and he's ruffling around for something trivial, like milk, and he just casually tosses over his shoulder, hey, your grandmother died. And my sister didn't believe it, and I couldn't blame her. So she comes to find me and finds me sitting on the couch crying, and in that moment, she knows that our grandmother died, and she breaks down. So I vow I won't cry again, and I'll just be strong for my sister. And I didn't. That whole summer, I didn't cry about my grandmother dying. But a couple months later, I'm sitting in Honors American Lit, and our teacher tells us to close our eyes, and they're going to read a poem about death. And so I'm sitting there, and I'm imagining these words, and I start to cry. And at first, it's very silent, and I can just brush the tears away, and no one will know. But then it becomes ugly crying. Like, I am a snotty, slobbering mess. My whole body's shaking. I can't catch my breath. And I decide to leave the classroom because I've already made a scene and I don't want to make a bigger one. And my teachers follow me out and they ask me what's going on, but I can't communicate it to them. Like, I just can't get words out. I'm barely catching my breath. So they take me down to the nurse's office. And the nurse doesn't know what to do because I'm not hurt in a way that she can help. And she just keeps asking me over and over, what's wrong? How can I help? What do you need? And I finally get out. I need my dad. Because to me in that moment, that felt like comfort. And so while we're waiting for my dad to drive to the school, the guidance counselor and the nurse make the decision that I need to be in grief counseling because they were concerned about my stability. So for the next couple of weeks, that's what I focused on. Like, I went to other classes, but I really had to focus on handling my grief. And so that became my MO for handling grief. I would have one intense outburst of emotion, and then I would just cram it all down until it boils over and incapacitates me. So I knew when thinking about Columbus and thinking about giving up my comfortable life, I didn't want to handle grief that way. I couldn't do that anymore because, you know, this wasn't tragedy. And maybe I shouldn't handle tragedy this way either. But I was getting to go do something that was amazing. And it did mean I had to let go of my comfortable life. But I knew I wanted to learn how to grieve. I felt like it was an opportunity to have God heal that which was broken in me so I could do it in a healthy manner. And so with that understanding, I was able to look back over the last couple months and see how my life followed the pattern of the classic stages of grief. There was denial. I refused to acknowledge I was moving to Columbus. Like, in the beginning, when you talked to me, it was like, yeah, this is going on here, and crickets about moving. And then I moved into anger. Like, I was angry with God, not because of the ask. Like, I knew he was asking me to go to Columbus, and I was totally okay with that in theory, but why was it so hard? Why did I have to give up my life? And then I began to bargain, like, hey, God, I'll go for a year, and then you'll let me move back, right? Like, I'll go do that thing, but then I get to come back to my comfort zone. And then I began to say, okay, what if you just grow me a little more? Like, help me figure out how I can be part-time in Columbus and part-time in Cincinnati. And no matter how much I planned and how much I tried to manipulate time, I couldn't make it work. So I hit this breaking point. I had to choose to go to Columbus and let go of my comfortable life, or I would just continue life as I know it. And the significance of that for me was Cincinnati is the place I've lived the longest. When I was a kid, I went to two different elementaries in two different states. I went to three different high schools in three different states. So I moved around, but Cincinnati is the first place that I stayed for 11 years. And that meant I knew there were friends that I was gonna have to let go of. And my friendships with others was just going to have to change. Like, our dynamic would be different. My family lives in Cincinnati. Everyone but one sister who lives in Boston. So now we're gonna have to be more intentional about our time. My condo, it was really important to me. I felt like it was specifically for me, and I was gonna have to sell it. So I decide, I'm going to Columbus, and I'm gonna figure out how to let this go. And then the sadness set in, and I was depressed. And when I was talking to Kathy, she reminded me of what Jesus said on the Sermon on the Mount. He says, "Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall receive comfort." And then I didn't know what that meant, but it felt like a promise. And I received comfort. I received comfort in having people who didn't know me welcome me into their homes and making me feel at home. I had people who came to my new apartment and prayed for all the rooms and blessed it so I would feel comfortable in that new space. This was amazing comfort, things that I could not have experienced. And I wouldn't even known that I needed to because I didn't realize change required grieving because you were going to lose something. And acceptance for me didn't look like a specific day that I can mark on the calendar. I just know I was less sad. And doesn't mean I don't get sad. I still have moments when my 5-year-old niece looks up at me with her little sad puppy dog eyes and says, "Mimi, I don't want you to go because I miss you and I just love you so much." Well, that's hard. But I just remind her that she gets to come and visit me and of all the things we can do in Columbus. And she's 5, so she forgets. I now know that to step into change, to really embrace it, there's things that I have to let go of. And to do that in a healthy manner, I have to grieve it.
Back in February, Crossroads started a 6-week program called Undivided that faces the reality of racial tension. The pastor here says it's a program that could help now more than ever.
It really takes people getting in homes, having conversations around the dinner tables, getting into each other's lives, for people's hearts to really change.
Everybody had a point of view, a position, a mindset, but nobody was talking about how we make the things better. How do we fix this? There's no discussion.
Undivided takes people into mixed race groups and looks at racial divide in Cincinnati and the entire country.
I immediately said, I want to be a part of the solution.
It's true what you said. We all have unconscious biases that we bring into this conversation, and it's just good in the context of relationship to talk about it.
We had older people, younger people, white, black.
And they were opening up their hearts to, some of it was ignorance. They just didn't know what they didn't know.
That was the reason why God brought me to this thing. He wanted me to feel loved by all people.
I stand in bold hope that God is more powerful than the world is broken. This is what the church is for. This is the time, this is the moment where the church has to speak. Honestly, if we don't speak in situations that are as broken as what we see right now, when will we speak? When will we speak? I believe the gospel is good news.
So my son is 3 years old. He loves asking questions. So he'll say, "Daddy, what was it like when you grew up?" Which is super cute, until the follow-up question, "Were you friends with the dinosaurs?" "No, buddy, the dinosaurs are extinct." He says, "No, I know, that was a long time ago." I'm like, oh. He doesn't really quite have the whole historical timeline in his head yet. This is him, Jacob. He's the older one. Wyatt's the younger one. He can't quite talk yet, but he's pretty awesome. Jacob just hasn't lived enough life to really understand the whole breadth of history and how things fit together and how young his dad really is. You know, but me, on the other hand, I've been around long enough to experience a few things, and namely to hear the sweet sound of this. Wait for it.
You've got mail.
Woo! AOL trial disk after AOL trial disk, hours and hours, and suddenly the whole world was at my fingertips. I know, you're jealous. I grew up in an incredible time. But relatively speaking, you just fast forward a few short years, and this is kind of a common occurrence in my house right now. So we'll finish up dinner. The boys will run into the living room. We'll all sort of move in there to play. Jacob, 3 years old, gets there first, runs over to the side table and says, "Alexa, turn on the living room lights." And bam, lights go on. We're like playing Legos and dinosaurs and the whole deal. And I kind of realized the house feels kind of warm. So I turn the AC up with my phone. And right before bedtime, Jacob tries to buy a little bit more time before he has to go upstairs. So he'll run over to the side table and say, "Alexa, play Little Drummer Boy by Pentatonix." It doesn't matter what time of year it is, that's his go-to jam, which is great. So as silly as it sounds, this is kind of a normal occurrence in my house, and man, how fast things change. You know, I think the actual way we live our lives has changed as a result of this same technology. You know, only 10 years ago, Hulu was just coming on the scene. Netflix was just starting to figure out how to stream movies. And YouTube was basically the place you went to kill time. So basically watch this guy fight with his landlord or her answer questions or this adorable couple hold hands. And it was sweet. But now, most of us today actually fall asleep sometimes watching Netflix and Hulu. We've watched the entire latest season of House of Cards. And YouTube is the second largest search engine in the world, bigger than AOL, Yahoo, and Bing combined. Some of us have actually rewired our house, taken apart and put back together our car, cut our hair, or planned an entire vacation after watching a YouTube video. The world has officially changed. And not all for the better. Right? The reality is that we have tremendous issues in our world right now. There's divisions and inequalities and injustice that seems so palpable at times. Things that seemed so constant and for sure are now kind of debatable and up for change. And the reality is I'm not comfortable at all. I'm not happy at all with the status quo of our world. But I actually think the church, the people who follow God, this is the time for which we were made. You know, people are asking questions. We're asking questions. We're spending more than $10 billion a year in America alone on self-help books and tools, and we're searching Pinterest and YouTube for help on how to parent. And when people are looking for answers in our Facebook feeds and our news channels are just giving us the same old, same old, same old stuff, then the church, the people who follow God, well, we have some pretty great things to offer. And I'm not at all happy about the sort of state of our world, but the reality is, I think I'm hopeful because I think we have the makings of a movement on our hands. You see, to have a movement, you need two things. You first need a change in the environment. You need something, new laws, new cultural context, advances in technology. Something shifts in the environment. And then you also need people. People who are willing to do something different, people who are not okay with the status quo and willing to take action. If you just have a change in the environment, then all you end up with is a new status quo. If you just have people who get really excited about making a change, but there's no environment change to support it, they get really excited, but the movement doesn't sustain. You have to have both a change in the environment and a people who are committed to action to start a movement. You know, a great example of a movement that was sort of based in this new environment, a new cultural context, and some advances in technology, and a people who were fervently committed to something better than the status quo was the civil rights movement. You know, at the beginning of the 1950s, television was only available in a few people's homes. It was a novelty. But as the civil rights movement was coming to a head, by the end of the 1960s, television was actually available in 90% of homes in America. So suddenly, you had a culture, an environment that had changed because people were now connected. They could look on their televisions and see what was happening in Selma and Memphis and Birmingham, and they could be moved and have a heart transformation where they say, hey, that's not okay. I'm not going to live in a society where those injustices take place. And suddenly, there could be a groundswell of people joining the movement. You have a change in the environment and a group of people committed to taking action. And I actually think there's a third ingredient that takes place in some movements. I think it's when God is up to something. And the reality is God has always been up to something. But actually today, uniquely in our sort of corner of the world, God is up to something here. And it's something incredible. And I think he's sparking something. So take a look at this.
When Jesus crashed into the world 2,000 years ago, he came to start a movement. He came to bring the kingdom of God to earth. And the way this movement spreads is by people following Jesus, by people living and loving like Jesus. This movement is our mission. It's why we're hell-bent on flipping our city, why we'll go anywhere to spread Jesus' love, forgiveness, and freedom. It's why we continue to launch more sites and more services wherever God calls us, to give our friends a safe place to hear about God's love for them. The weekend services at Crossroads are where we get taught and trained about who Jesus is and who we are, and where we get mobilized into the action of following Jesus. But there's a limit to how far we can go with just more sites and more services. There aren't enough buildings or services to contain this movement we're called to. So what if we tore down those limitations and opened our homes for the mission? Crossroads is one church with multiple sites, but with our homes, we're one church with thousands of sites. What could happen in our city and our world if we treated our homes as kingdom resources where people could find belonging and connection? See, where there are limits to how far we can go with just more sites, the power of our homes to reach our city is unlimited. The power of our homes to go deeper with our friends, neighbors, and families is unlimited. What could happen if we used our homes to love our neighbors? If we used our homes to serve those in need? If our homes became places to grow together and heal together, pray together, laugh together, and celebrate together? And what could happen in our lives and our families for generations to come if our homes became outposts of the church? This movement needs you and your home. Whether you're single, married, or living with roommates, whether you're renting or a homeowner, if we all make our homes an extension of the church and the kingdom, our cities will flip. The movement will spread. We will see God change the world in ways we've never imagined.
Did you know that this is happening? Did you know that God has created a way for Crossroads to be in 44 states in our country? Not just streamed into 44 states, we've actually streamed in all the states of our country. I mean people, communities who are actually engaged, a part of Crossroads in 44 states in our country. That folks from North Carolina, from Florida, from Indiana, from Kentucky have been baptized as a result of being a part of Crossroads. That we've had folks in four countries start communities, from countries all over the world stream our services. That people have driven hundreds of miles to come to Man and Woman Camp, and God is just getting started. And I think this is incredibly exciting. I think it's exciting that in a time where culture says fewer and fewer people are going to church, that God is up to something. And he's creating a way for Crossroads to have services and outposts and gatherings across the entire country. And I think it's really exciting that in a culture where it says that church is increasingly irrelevant, God is moving us to create new and immersive ways to talk and learn about Jesus. I think God is up to something. He's up to something in me and you and us to where we're starting to care about our neighbors. We're getting to know them, inviting them into our house. We're upset that our friends and our family members don't know God the way that we do, that they can experience freedom from having to perform to be loved or from a culture of individualism or consumerism. And we want to move into that space because God is up to something. I believe that he's up to something and that he's starting a movement. And the really exciting thing to me is that this new thing that God is doing, this movement that we could step into and be a part of, is actually a movement that was started thousands of years ago. It's a new chapter in a long book and a winning track record of a movement that we can learn about from the book of Acts. The book of Acts is a book in the Bible. It's basically an early account of the early church, the community that God used to start a movement right after Jesus was on the earth. And we're going to read in a minute a few sentences that describe what this community was like, what these people were like, and what we could learn from them about being people who are involved in and starting a movement today. So I'll read you from Acts chapter 2. As it describes the movement, it says, "And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul. And many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved." I want to be a part of that movement. Being known, sacrificial generosity, deep, meaningful prayer, being a part of the team who takes care of each other and who's going after making an impact in the world. And if God is doing a new thing, if he's writing a new chapter to that story, if he wants to use the advances in technology, our shaking society, our new environment, and us who are willing to make a difference, I want to be a part of that. Do you want to be a part of that? I think the reality is we can take notes and learn what it looks like to actually be a part of a movement that God is starting. So let's go back and look sometimes verse by verse and see what we can take out of what it looked like for these early folks to be involved in this movement. So I'll give you an example. So remember how we just read, "And they devoted themselves to the updating of their Facebook profile pictures to include a badge indicating their agreement with the idea of a..." Wait, that's not right. Hold on. No, go to the next one. And they devoted themselves to saying that they would probably pray about that one thing later, but limited to, but not including, good vibes and good thoughts. No, wait, sorry, that's not right. What was the real one? And day by day, they continued to do what they had always done. That's right. Mentally assenting to the idea of change, but not really allowing it to impact their life. No, the reality is we want a movement. But in today's culture, anything can be called a movement, and we can convince ourselves that we're a part of it by changing our Facebook profile page or doing something. But the reality is you can't cheer on a movement to get it started. You actually have to be a part of it. And we have an opportunity, you and me, to actually live this in the flesh and not just vicariously through social media. We have an opportunity to work the ingredients of a movement. You know, I can imagine the scene. You know, you can sort of picture it like we're all standing in my kitchen. And I go, okay, great, we're going to make cupcakes. Well, who doesn't want to make cupcakes? So my boys flip out. They're really excited. And I say, here are all the ingredients to cupcakes. Here's a changed environment. And we're all the people who want to see cupcakes get made. Isn't this exciting? And so they go, oh, this is great. And so they throw flour on the island. And they throw sticks of butter. And then somebody throws sugar on there. And then, like, people are striking matches for fire and the whole thing. And then, bam, no, that's not how it works. Cupcakes don't just magically appear. You have to work the ingredients. And the same is true of a movement. When the environment is right and we have a people willing to take action, what we have to do is work the ingredients to bring a movement about. And working a movement requires three things: commitment, connection, and creativity. Working a movement requires commitment. It seems like a really obvious thing. It's one of those things that is simple to understand and actually difficult to put into practice. You know, I have a friend who is committed to the cause of clean water. I know this about him because he and his wife raise money really frequently for this cause. They actually give significantly of their own money to the cause. And every year when their birthdays come around on social media, they actually tell people not to get them gifts, but to give money to the cause. And pretty quickly, when I look at their life, I can tell that they're committed to the cause and I'm not. And that's okay, because we all can't be committed to everything. You know, but if you want to figure out what are you committed to, one of the best ways to uncover that is to look at how you spend your money and your time. You know, if we were to pull up our bank statements and look at that, for me, and I think for most of us, one of the things that we would pretty quickly see is that we spend a lot of time and money being committed to our family. And that's really good. That would be true of me. You would look at my bank statement right now and you would see that we're painting our house to make it a nice place to live. You'd see zoo memberships and YMCA memberships. We just bought pool toys the other day for the summer to take to the Y. That's all as a result of us being committed to building a healthy family. Our time and our money reveals that in us. If you sort of dig one level deeper, I think in most of us, and myself included, the next kind of thing that gets uncovered is our commitment to self-preservation. Now, I don't mean like spending buckets of money on food to store in your basement, though you know who you are. I'm talking about our commitment to spending money to be comfortable. You know, the reality in our world is that it's pretty weird for me to admit to you that I'm not committed to the cause of clean drinking water. Because I actually think it's really important. I'm really thankful that some people are. But in our culture, we want to all come across as sort of cause-oriented, good people. And so I think, though, as a result of wanting to seem like we're for everything, we can actually end up being not committed to anything, which is a problem because movements require commitment. They require us to be sacrificially generous, to sacrifice our time and our skills. You can't start a movement by sort of just agreeing with it or cheering it on. You can join the bandwagon later, but at the beginning, at this stage, if we want to start a movement, we actually have to commit ourselves to it. And our culture is sort of resistant to that because our culture really favors consumerism. It favors not pushing the bounds. It favors being comfortable. It favors not going out on a limb and kind of organizing things around us. But the reality is that when you're going to be a movement maker, you have to sacrifice some things to get the first things first. And kind of a great example around the Crossroads community of this kind of action is the I'm In campaign. So a couple of years ago, many people around Crossroads committed, this was back in November of 2015, this started, to financially give money above and beyond what we normally give around Crossroads to fuel and invest in some things that we wanted to see grow and some new initiatives that we felt like God was calling us to. It was a really big deal. And Crossroads Anywhere, the way that you and I are connected and we're all connected now across the country and all the incredible things that have happened through that is actually has only happened as a result of people committing to and actually following through on their commitment to fulfill their I'm In campaign commitments. And Leah and I, my wife Leah and I, we're in that group. You know, so we committed back in November, and every week we have money that comes out automatically, the same amount every week. And we do that in part to be faithful and in part, if I'm honest, because if it was in my bank account, I would spend it. You know, there have probably been three or four times I have actually have opened up my laptop, I have logged into the website, and I've nearly gotten to the point where I'm just going to pause the recurring gift thing for I'm In for just a few weeks, and then I'm totally going to make it up on the back end, you know. And I do that because all the time I think about, well, there's this vacation that I think we could take, or if we had just a little bit more money for date nights and babysitters and all this stuff. I do that all the time. And also, I haven't done that because I also love that I'm a part of this. I love that even though, you know, I'm giving and it hurts sometimes and I think about what I could have, I think about what I do have. I have confidence that I'm invested in a thing that is actually making a difference. And I really, for me, giving through the I'm In campaign is not the only way that I know that I'm committed to something, but it's not confusing to Leah and I at all that we are committed to what God is doing around Crossroads, and it's revealed through that action. You know, I think when you get to the point where you're deciding to be committed to a movement, you start asking different questions. The questions sort of shift from how will this good thing impact my life to how might my life impact the world? You start asking questions, you start doing, well, how will this new good thing fit into my life? And then instead you start going like, how do I take this important thing, put it in first, and how can everything else around it support its mission? Movements require that level of commitment. They also require connection. Movements are fueled by, they're spread by relationships. We can see this pretty simply today on social media, or if a little bit of a flash from the past, if any of you guys remember Oprah's favorite things. Their minds. People are losing their minds. I like the guy at the end. He's like crying, huddled over, gripping the thing. Oprah's favorite things was a really big deal. If you could get your product on that list, your sales went through the roof. It was a big deal because Oprah would tell everyone in her network, everyone she was connected with, about your thing. And as a result, as you can see, people would like sell their homes and their cars so they could make sure they got it. I just remember, you know, years ago, like this, so this was an annual thing. I'm pretty sure it still exists today. But one year it sort of jumped the shark for me because I think Oprah declared that saltwater taffy, that year it was saltwater taffy. Any saltwater taffy in the whole world was one of her favorite things. It was really great. So it sort of got in more and more interesting as the years went on. But the reality is that her network, her connections were really powerful. And we see this in social media today. You know, how many times have we seen in the last few years causes which we are now knowledgeable of and even moved to support and partake in because social media has connected us to things that we never would have known about had our networks not been connected, had people not shared the things that were important to them. And the reality for us, and this sounds funny, so you'll have to go with me for a little bit, but it's true. You are Oprah to some people. I don't know if you'll believe me. I don't know if you can picture that. The reality is that you are Oprah to some people. There's some people in your life who look at you and they wish they knew the anchor that they had in your life. There's people who, you know, parents up and down the soccer field this summer. There's folks at the pool that you're going to be hanging out with. There's a guy three cubes down at work. They look at your life and they know you're not perfect, but they know that you have something that they don't have. And the reality is that no good thing can get passed on to someone else unless we're willing to share it. And I think about what I have in my life, my favorite things, the most important things to me. When I think about God, when I think about the anchor that he is in my life, when I think about how he's freed me from having to perform for people's approval, when I think about how he's given me peace and joy in all kinds of crazy circumstances, when I think about the freedom I experience from him, I think about he's one of my favorite things. And if you have any of those things in common, well, you and I, we've got to figure out how do we tell more people about some of the most important things in our life. But I realize it's hard. I realize it's hard because our culture sort of is one of individualism. It's one where we sort of separate ourselves from people. We don't want to get in people's worlds too much. We don't want to step on anybody's shoes. And it's really challenging. You know, I'm as guilty as anyone. I'll get on a plane and sit down next to somebody and sort of, hey, how's it going? How's it going? And we're like race to put our headphones on before we get into a conversation. Or I'll be on an event and we'll sort of be like meeting people. And you get into a great conversation. And I sort of steer conversations away sometimes of like, what do you do for a living? Because I'm afraid oftentimes that like the experience will happen of like, I'll say, oh, well, I'm a pastor. And then you'll sort of see this move where like the beer suddenly drops down here and they start saying words like dang and shucks. You know, but like an exaggeration, but only a little bit. We can feel like we can shut down conversations, but the reality is with the people who we know, who we've built relationships with, they actually really care about me. They care about what I care about. They care about what I think and what I believe. And for the folks who we're close with, they'd be more offended that we wouldn't tell them about the most important thing in our life, that we wouldn't tell them about the thing that's helping our marriage, that we wouldn't tell them about the thing that's helping us raise good kids. They'd be more offended if we didn't tell them about that stuff than if we did. And I think we've got to step into a little bit of bravery and boldness and realize that this movement that we want to be a part of, this movement that we want to start, it requires us to, in our relationships, to leverage our connections. It also requires us to be creative. You know, no one in the world has ever read a sentence in a history book that they read something like, and then those people started that movement by doing the same old thing they had always done, expecting different results. It's never happened, ever. Movements require us to be creative. They require us to break old rules, to challenge assumptions, to create new ways forward. And when we do that, we're going to step on some toes. We're gonna not do things the way that they've always been done because we want different results. We want to see God show up and move in a different way. And so when we make those moves, there's going to be people who sort of look at us and wonder, like, does that even count? Is that even church, that thing you're doing? You have people in your living room? That's not church, you know? I mean, we've created this app. I don't know if you have it or not. Crossroads Anywhere is the name of the app. You can download it in an app store. It's awesome. It's got ways for you to connect every day with God, stuff for your group to do. You can watch the weekend. You can get reminders for the weekend. The thing I'm most excited about right now is the Today feature. It's the feature that lets you create a regular rhythm of connecting with God. That regular rhythm is one of the things that I can really confidently say that if you establish that regular rhythm, it will change your life. And so we want to create a new way. We want to use technology to help thousands of people create a regular rhythm of connecting with God. But there'll be people who sort of cross their arms and stand over there like, that doesn't count. You can't read the Bible on your phone. You need a paper Bible. You need to be journaling in a moleskin at 5 a.m. by candlelight. No, it doesn't matter. We're going to step into a new space. And our mission at Crossroads is to connect seekers to a community of growing Christ followers who are changing the world. That mission will never change. It will never go away. That will always be our mission. But the reality is we're not married to any particular method to accomplish that mission. And so the reality is that we'll try everything we can short of sin to connect seekers to a community of growing Christ followers who are changing the world. And that includes using technology to help thousands of people create a daily habit of connecting with God. It's not limited to technology. The reality is it's what you guys are doing all over the country. You as people are gathering in new ways. And so on Sunday mornings, instead of coming together to watch a service together, some of you are actually, you're watching it during the week on your own, and you're coming together, and you're sort of getting all the bacon and the eggs together, and you're having a conversation around a table about how the message impacts your life. And that's brilliant. That's a new way for the church to gather together and do community and be on the same page and move in the same direction. And we have to be willing to be entrepreneurial, to be opportunistic, to take any method possible to accomplish that mission. Because movements require creativity. And I'll end with this story because it was a really fun, it was a fun experience for me and kind of gave me a vision for the future. A few weeks ago, I was at Miami University at a Crossroads site that we have there on that campus. And I was there because I was going to talk to the students before they left for summer break about Crossroads Connect and how even though they have to leave campus to go home or to go to a job in a new city, they don't have to leave their church. And it was a really sweet moment because I graduated from Miami. That's where I met Leah. And so Leah and I were both there. We had our boys. And so we're like, you can imagine, we're like walking through the halls. We're going like, take notes, boys, because this is where you will go to school. It was really great. But I was standing up, kind of casting a vision for Crossroads Anywhere. And it was a surreal moment for me because I can see my boys. And the hope that I have for them is that one day when they go to school, they're going to go somewhere where there's a Crossroads. And I just realized that it would have been awesome at Miami for there to have been a Crossroads when Leah and I were there. But I fast forward a few years, and I think that high school students all around the country are going to be researching colleges. And one of the questions they're going to ask is like, is there a Crossroads there? And incredibly, most of the time, I think the answer will be yes. But sometimes it won't, and maybe that will be even the better moment. Because in that moment, they'll go, huh, okay, well, great, I'll start one. Because that's the answer I got at Miami. So I stood outside the auditorium after service, connecting students to, hey, oh yeah, absolutely, there's a community in Cleveland. Absolutely, here, there's a community in Louisville. But sometimes they would come up and they'd ask about a city where we didn't have a community. And I'd sort of be apologetic. I'd say, hey, we're just getting started. We don't have a community there. And they'd be like, hey, no big deal. I'll start one. Just like that. That's the beginning of a movement. That's the movement we get to be a part of, a movement where we get to commit, where we get to be creative, where we used to invest in and leverage our connections to be a part of something that outgrows us and outlives us. And the reality is that it's a part of a movement that started thousands of years ago. And I think about what Jesus did to create a way for us to be in relationship with him. When he died on a cross and created a way for us to know God, to not live lives of isolation, to not live lives without purpose, to not just wake up, work, rinse, repeat, but to actually know God and be a part of his family and the thing that he's doing in the world, which is what this movement is a part of. It's humbling because we realize that God had enough forethought to know that you and I would be having this conversation today, enough forethought to go that there's going to be a Crossroads and there's going to be a way that I'm going to use Crossroads in the lives of people who don't even know what it is yet. Because I want as many people as possible to know me and the freedom that I offer. And it's an incredible thing that we can be a part of. And it's awesome because he created a way for us to get a sort of normal habit of remembering that. Because the reality is we can't create any of this on our own. We can have designs and systems and strategies and plans and the whole nine yards, and we can work really hard, and all of that is actually really important. But if God doesn't want it to happen, it can't happen. And there's no better reminder of that than communion. When we take communion together, it's a reminder that without what Jesus did, I can't create this relationship with God on my own. I can't, all the things that are purpose in my life, all the gifts that he's given me, they didn't come because I earned them. They didn't come because I deserve them. They came because God was really generous to me. And he created a way for me to be a son and have a secure identity and to know him and be a part of what he's doing. And communion reminds us of that. And so we're going to take communion. And you could take communion today, and as you do, you could be thinking about a couple of different things. First and foremost, thinking about the fact that Jesus created a way for you to know God and to be a part of what he's doing in this world. And also, uniquely, maybe today, about how he's inviting you into sort of deeper levels of commitment, deeper levels of creativity, deeper levels of connection, as you sort of move forward. And so we're gonna have a time where we're gonna take communion. We're gonna worship a little bit more. And as we do, wherever you're at, you can grab, if you have bread and wine, kudos, you're like prepared. If you're not, no worries. You can go grab crackers and pop. It doesn't really matter. What matters is what we remember when we do this. And so as we sing this song, we have an opportunity to serve communion to each other. Anyone who follows Jesus can participate in this moment. And as we do, we're gonna think about the movement that we've been invited into, because Jesus created us a way to know God personally.
awesome that you joined us this week. We believe that no matter where we are, when we gather together, God is with us. And we believe that that is irregardless of how far away you are from the person next to you. We're connected through technology, and we think God is in the midst of it. We want you to be a part of this movement that Matt talked about. So the next step for you is to go to crossroads.net/connect, get yourself on the map, find some people, gather together, and let's do this thing. We'll see you next week.